Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome, shalom, bruchim habaim. Welcome to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak. I'm Ilan Azulay. I'm your host, spiritual mentor, a sound therapist with Sound NLP, for you who are ready to reclaim your power. Reclaiming your power starts with you, recognizing the powers and the gifts that you have here, that you've been given to bring yourself and to show your gifts to the world. הריני מקבל על עצמי את מצוות עשה של ואהבת לרעך כמוך. I hereby accept on myself the due commandment or the utterance of love your friend, your neighbor, your guests, in the same way that you express love to yourself. And the focus first starts with yourself. How do we speak to ourselves? How do we speak to us when something happens? How do we respond? Do we respond or do we react? What choices do we make and what places do we inhabit within ourselves when we make choices? When we make choices in regards to relationships, in regards to work, in regards to our path. And ultimately, it's showing off to the world. So welcome. Welcome. I'm happy that you're here. Thank you for being here. And in this program, whether it is here in English at LA Talk Radio or on my Hebrew channel, on my page on Fridays, I bring individuals, people that have their gifts, that are showing their gifts, have been showing their gifts for years, have been entering their power, recognizing the power and the gifts within them for inspiration. For each one of us to be inspired and to see that, yes, it is here. It is real. We have this power, these gifts. And what do we do with them? So I'm delighted to have here Rachel Davidson, who is, Rachel was here. Rachel, do you see me? Okay, so I have your video. There is Rachel.
Hi.
Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Good, Ilan. I'm so happy to be back here.
I'm happy to be back. I want to share with you, everyone. Rachel, actually, this week is going to be 2 years since I started this program on my birthday, and I started this two years ago.
Is this Rachel, your birthday week?
It's the 17th, I think. Yeah, the 17th.
You think?
Yeah. 17th. Yeah, the 17th. And Rachel, I think, was my second guest on the program, second or third guest. So it was this month. So 2 years. Rachel is a yoga instructor, and she has a lot of interesting yoga practices that she does in different places. And since she's been here, she started on a coaching program, and she's a coach. She helps special, like in a healthy lifestyle. And we'll hear her story. She's a very unique story. Mm-hmm. And so she's been here 2 years ago, and we've been on and off kind of in contact. And today she's here, and I'm so delighted because she's here to share her gifts and to bring herself to the world. And guess what? We're both pinky.
Yes, we're both wearing pink. That was a coincidence. Maybe not.
But it was a totally beautiful left pink. Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Hi. I'm so good. I just had a delightful morning, and I feel very, very pleased to be here with everybody.
Thank you. Before we continue, you know, the mic that you have is rubbing off the jacket.
Oh,
so we need to keep it somehow.
How is this?
Unrubbing.
How is that? Good.
That's okay, perfect. Good. That's wonderful.
Right. I'll just hold it. Now I understand. I don't know if you've seen, but there's these like helicopter headphones that have become very popular. They look like this, but they have little helicopter.
Oh, they have mic. like a mic. Like
yeah, yeah. Well, and I think it's funny, but now I see the purpose of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've been here. They've been for a long time. It's usually for people that are on stage, and it's kind of attached to the cheek, and it doesn't, mm-hmm, I don't know. But I'm glad that you are here. I'm glad that you are here. And so, Rachel, tell everyone who you are. And I know you have a very unique approach to working with people, because you come from a world where you struggled a lot with calories. I mean, I know that you've been telling me this, and you went through a lot of anxiety, and you are here, and you are in this space.
And I'm alive, and I'm living an amazing life. So
you're not just alive, you are flying. I mean, that's great. So tell us. So how did you start? How did you start with saying that you want to... Tell us about your story first, how you came to that.
Well, you know, I grew up in a very loving family, and a Jewish family, and I would say we were warm and we were passionate, and but there was a lot of pressure, a pressure to be perfect, a pressure to, to be the best that you could be, and I think that's a beautiful thing. It's inspiring. And at the same time, there, I didn't feel like there was a lot of room to fail or to try something new.
So it wasn't really the best that you can be as you. It was the best that you can be for them.
Perhaps, yeah. I think maybe they, I don't know that that was their intention, the family's intention. Mm-hmm. But that was the message that I got. And ultimately, the underlying message that I can now see, right, like you look back in hindsight, was that the way that I was not good enough. If I did nothing else to Rachel, right, if I didn't change Rachel, it would be a big problem. Mm. She wouldn't get, her dreams would not be met, So it was almost like, well, if you want to live the life you dream, you have to do a lot to change yourself.
How would they know? They never lived it.
No, they never lived it. I know. But this was like the message. Yeah. And I don't know that those things weren't explicitly told to me. So, but this is the conclusions that we all draw. We all have trauma. We all have things that happen to us in our lives. And our parents are doing the best they can. And our aunts and uncles are doing the best they can. And everyone probably just wants to send a good message so that their children or their offspring or their family doesn't have to struggle in the way that they did. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's a protection. It's a defense mechanism from the hurt of the world or the hurt that they experience. So I'm grateful for their lessons. It's also made me who I am, but it just didn't work, and trying to follow in their footsteps or like be that perfect daughter or, not make any mistakes. And it led me down a path of a lot of resistance. I resisted my body. I resisted my face. I resisted my whole being. And I think a lot of times people do that when they're seeking personal development. I think we can all be inspired by growth and all be inspired to learn. But sometimes the motivation behind it is coming from this place that like, I'm not good enough, right? Mm-hmm. Or that like, I'm not worthy of love the way I am, so I have to change myself. So that was I don't think the start of my journey was voluntary in the sense that it wasn't like I was like, gosh, I just like want to be better. I was not in a good place. So better meant like wanting to be alive at that point.
Yeah, it's a survival thing. Many times when we start our journeys, we really don't know. Sometimes we're not conscious of it. And, we are being pushed to a corner. We're being pushed to a corner. We are born into the families. You come with just, Jewish families, they have a lot of expectations from children. Mm-hmm. And so we are born into this world that, yes, they have they have good intentions because you are their child and they want the best for you. And at the end of the day, it is not their journey. It is not your journey, is not their journey. And that's where a lot of judgment comes, when people compare lives and compare outcomes of other to supposedly their own outcome, if there was any, according to what they wanted. So it kind of, and so our journey is really to break out of this, break out of these boundaries, break out of these limitations. Let's put it this way. Because I think boundaries are good. Boundaries are good because, they put us in certain directions. Sure. Is this something good for me? Is this something not good for me?
Right. Boundaries and commitment, you know.
Commitments, yes.
I get so afraid of a commitment. You know, they don't want to declare things. They don't want to say, this is what I want, or they don't want to commit to a project or even a person, right? I like working with people in relationships and intimacy as well. And let's face it, the ultimate relationship and intimacy is with ourselves.
That's true. That's true. So in relation, I want to go back to in relationships here. We'll talk about that.
Talking about that.
I'm sorry.
I said we always like talking about.
Because really it is about relationships, you know, but here's the thing: we're saying, you know, it's kind of like almost like a two-ended sword. We say, well, we have to be better with ourselves in order to be in a good relationship. And many times the partner that we choose is a reflection. I mean, all the time is a reflection of where we are. So that helps us grow. You know, it is that person will challenge us and we have a choice. Is this something that that requires my attention? Is this something that I can shift? Is this something that I need to change? Or is it easy to just dump it on somebody else and say, no, you know what? You change. So there is a lot of conflict. But the main point is, what place do we inhabit within ourselves? Where we are within us when we choose a partner? For example, if we take your situation where you were in a dark space, you know, and I remember also
I had dark partners.
Well, but so that is a reflection of where you are. I mean, I know what it is. I mean, we've been in these similar stories, just similar situations, just different stories. And so what comes first? It's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? What comes first, us being in a good place with ourselves or being in a place with somebody that illuminates that which we want or that which we don't want?
Right. Well, it's a great question. And one of the things is, I guess for me, like I feel so grateful for all of the mirrors that I've had in my life. Like, you know, if you're attracting something, I wouldn't say that we just attract people where we're at. We also attract that which we think we deserve or that we don't deserve.
Or which we want. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is interesting to look back on, and I'm sure you do the same on all of your relationships. So then and then see like, that's why that person was in my life. You know,
I really
do believe that everybody is here to teach us something.
Yeah, exactly. I call, you know, in relationships, my experience, I call it zigzag relationships. Mm. So here's a situation and tell me if it resonates with you. So if I was been in a relationship, the next relationship, I found myself in the place of the person that was in front of me in my previous relationship. And then I could, and it happened all the time. And I could.
Like the roles flipped, you mean?
Exactly. It's not about the roles flipped because the person now in front of me is not exactly me, but I'm talking about myself. So I would be in a in a relationship, the relationship would end. Mm-hmm. And then the next relationship, I realized suddenly I'm experiencing what that person in front of me in the previous relationship was that I did not see and I could not comprehend and I could not understand. And I feel that God says, you know, you want to understand it? Here, now you understand it. Mm-hmm. The cost was that other relationship for you to understand what is happening. Do you experience that?
Totally.
I call it zigzag relationships. It's like you go here, you go here, you go here.
Yeah, I mean, this is how we develop empathy, right? Like unfortunately, I think it is really quite challenging to be genuinely empathetic. Now, I think there are people that are naturally empathetic because they really do feel what other people feel. But if you are born that way, you know, a highly sensitive individual, and I mean that in an empowered sense, not a lot of people are like, oh, you're so sensitive and it's disempowered.
No,
I don't intend it in that way.
I get that.
That probably being in that state of vulnerability is very scary, especially if it's brought upon you, at an early age. And what often happens is we create a lot of defenses to protect ourselves from experiencing the empathy of others. And so even those who are naturally empathetic, I still think it is a practice to develop your empathy, because it's hard to feel, period, your own stuff, let alone somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And so these relationships that you're describing, they're, I think in any scenario, they give us perspective, and they teach us to like literally understand humanity. Like, yes, ourselves, but also hopefully compassion for humanity at large.
Yeah, you know, that's something that I feel it is developed. Yes, people naturally, there are some people that are sensitive in a way. And when I say overly sensitive, it's in relation to those who are not. And overly, not in a negative, but overly, sometimes it can be in our own way, because then everything is becoming sensitive. And with many people, being empathetic and being a channeler and channeling through, if the person doesn't let these flow through and stay with a person, then it becomes kind of lingers and it stays inside. So it's a practice of going through and allowing things to go through and still being in compassion and understanding where the other person comes from. Right.
How do you feel about sharing? You mentioned your zigzag relationship and what it's taught you. I'm not sure how you feel about sharing with us, or even just with me and our listeners, your most recent awakening from zigzagging.
Well, the thing, first of all, the program is about you, not about me. We're having a conversation. A conversation.
I'm curious, though.
We're having a conversation. So here's the thing. I went through a period. I started my conscious journey about 10, 12 years ago, something like that. Unknowingly, right? I went through certain things that appeared sequentially right. Mm-hmm. And I started making a film about 10 years ago, a documentary. And then I met somebody, a shaman who I was with, that through that experience, through these next years with a relationship that I was in, through a period that I wasn't conscious of what is going on. Mm. I was aware of it. Things start unfolding. And I've experienced these zigzag relationships many years, even before I was consciously in my awakening journey. I just didn't know, what the heck? What is happening? Why am I feeling like that was the other person? But when I start becoming conscious about it, I start applying and I start seeing, and it's about reflection. And when we are like in this coronic time now, it's about reflection. For many people, it appeared in certain positive ways. And for other people, it created the hardships and created a lot of turmoil. And some relationships, I know people that I work with that ended the relationships because of the corona, but it was just an illumination of where they are, of where they were. It was really a reflective time. All these past, I would say, 5 years, 6 years was just really deep, deep reflective, and seeing where I was and how I reacted many times, reacted from fear, reacted from patterns, reacted from a place of need, a place of victimhood, a place of all these kind of things that illuminated, came up into the surface. And being in that. Now, when people say, oh, be in this, experience it, allow this to happen, allow these emotions, allow these feelings to come through, of course, it's always easier said than done. And it is okay that it is easier said than done, because we have to go through these experiences to feel that. So it brought me to a place of, first of all, being comfortable in my own skin. Mm-hmm. Being comfortable in my own skin, whatever I do, and my choices are coming from What is the best for me? What is the best for my growth? What is the best for where I want to be in relation to myself, in relation to others in a relationship? It is coming to a place of, how does that person feel? How does that person sees things? Is the person in front of me comfortable? Am I listening really to the person that is in front of me? Am I really seeing what the person is about, rather than what do I get from that? And this is where I was for years. And when I came to that understanding, then everything, thoughts, prior thoughts, all the fears of going into intimacy, just dissolved. Like it didn't pose. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a buzz. It didn't pose an obstacle. It didn't pose an obstacle anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. And it is the judgment for me personally. It is the judgment that I grew up with, that eventually turned into my own judgment to my own self. That really was my stumbling block. Where it really was like, that's what held me back.
Yeah.
And then it manifested into other areas of creating, of doing, you know. And
I'm curious, like, so, when that.
Oh, you hear that?
Yeah.
Shish kebab. All right. There we go.
It's kind of soothing. It's like nothing like a good old fashioned white noise.
So yeah, go ahead. You wanted to ask something.
Yeah, I've been working on a new, for me, it's newer. It's not new to the planet, but I'm studying a newer form of coaching.
Oh, and that's what I want to hear about.
Yeah, I'm like loving this world of coaching. It's just so amazing. And, you know, like every client's breakthrough is my breakthrough. Every win
absolutely
is my win, you know. And so many times I arrive at a call and they bring the topic, right? It's client motivated.
It's guiding. You're really guiding. It's more
and,
guiding.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I'm like, they'll bring something up and I literally think to myself, thank you for bringing that up because I totally need that too. <You know? laughs> But what I was going to say is that this form of coaching that I'm doing with a gentleman who founded a program called Procabulary.
Procabulary.
Okay. His name is Mark England. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I want to call him John London, but that's not him. That's just my silly sense of humor. So Mark England and I have been working together. And what I'm basically, you touched on something about the intimacy and the being with yourself, being comfortable in your skin, and that the negative, and I'm summarizing, but the negative voices that were projected onto you by your family became your own voice. And
I broke out of them.
Right. Of course. Yeah. And I was just curious about your breaking out and like if you ever find that narrative or that negative voice back in your mind. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about this program is all about the tools to rewrite that story or even to get clarity and heal that story. Mm-hmm. And as I do this work, I'm noticing that like when that mean voice, that vicious voice in my head, oh my gosh, it's so mean, you know, and I approach it with love and kindness. But that voice it really was the voice of my family and the negative narrative that was projected onto me, that was projected onto them. You know, this goes back, this is not just my mother and my father.
These are generations, you know, there is a coaching that I do is called also family constellation. Mm. And family constellation really was created by Bert Hellinger, in the 90s. It's talking about the three generations. We are in the middle of the seven generations. So there are three generations behind us, three generations in front of us, and we bring the energies of the families or the relationship that we have with each part of our past, whether it is a family, whether it is money, whether it is relationships, and many times family members or those energies that we invite, that I invite and invoke in that treatment, they come and they transmit. And also if it's, also if these are people that have been deceased. So it is very powerful, very interesting. So we have generation, we have karmic information that we bring, energy that we bring, we carry with us.
Epigenetics is proving this on a cellular level.
Of course.
Of course, there's a spiritual component to everything.
Everything.
And I think science just oftentimes is supporting what we couldn't describe in the spiritual realm.
It's actually in the last 100 years, science have been support, have been proving the Torah, for example, or things that are conceptual in the Kabbalah and in Judaism to be more, to be more true, mm-hmm. you know, in regards to what you were just saying about family and family energy, I'll tell you when this comes up and you can tell me if it's how it manifests for you. Let's mm-hmm. say there is a challenge. Okay. There is a challenge. I tell you, I had an interview with a few weeks ago with Mati Kaspi, who is an Israeli musician, a mentor, is like in the level of Beethoven. He's considered to be Beethoven or Bach of Israel. Right. And for me, he was my, in many ways, my life savior since I was 10 years old, really. Mm. And so I've challenged him. Now I played his music and really was, it served me many years. So I had this interview with him, this coming together, Zoom to Zoom. And I was I was like, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And so that, however, before that happened, I went into this place of missing my family, for example. Now, when I missed my family, it brought all these known feelings of the home that I know, the home that I remember. With that came also the sentences that I would hear that were accompanying these feelings. Mm. So if I call my mom or at that time my dad, I would hear their sentences playing in the head, playing in my head. And when that happens, I can feel my body shifting. I could feel my posture is shifting, shifted at least. I could feel my posture shifting. I could feel my voice changing. I could feel that. Now I was able to see that as a movie. And this is what I help people do, is map their experiences. Mm-hmm. Get every experience that you're experiencing, map it like a piano, mm-hmm. so you can see everything. And when I, because I've done the work and still doing the work, it's never ending work, right? I was able to see that as a moving image. I could mm-hmm. feel that. I could feel that and yet to say, okay, this is what I feel. This is what I feel. These are several stages of several states of feeling, several states of where I'm at. And when I would notice that, it probably within 5 minutes or something like that, I shifted it. It's like flipping a light switch. You know, for many years, I would say when I started my work with the shaman, I said many years, oh, it's a light switch. I would say things. Mm. There was a disconnect, and this is what happens many times when we start a journey. There is an understanding, but there is no connection. There is no
integration.
There is no synergy, and we have a very narrow bridge in the middle. Mm-hmm. And that's where we have many times the problem. Many times people have problems in their neck area because the neck is a bridge. The neck is a bridge, and if we are not expressing our core, our power, our creativity, then we have mm. problems expressing it. So do you experience something like that? How is your experience going when that happens?
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Well, first, I love this.
Yeah, it is. It's, well, I also love how like there's a horrible saying, but it applies. There's many ways to skin a cat. I'm like,
my daughter, don't hear it. Don't listen. She didn't say she's an animal like this.
I have no intention of hurting any animals.
I get that.
I mean, but the point of the sentiment is intended to share how what you and I are doing are so similar, and mm-hmm. there's many paths to heal, and there's many paths to become a healthy and fully expressed individual. Mm-hmm. And to answer your question, doing the story work that I do and writing it down and breathing through it and processing, it gives me space to look at the story or the circumstance, the thing that happened to me. And instead of it being this victim mentality of this being put on me, now it's out there.
It's out there.
And I get to, now that's not a rejection of the thing. It's just being able to witness it from from an elevated perspective. And then when you do that, it gives you space, or it gives you space, or the person experiencing space to process and space to heal. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just think that for me, I had a story recently that I shared, and in the sharing, I could feel the energy, like very. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as much as I'm a feeler, it's not like I walk around being like, "Oh, I feel the energy," you know. And it was just like below the neck, like in a ball of energy radiating below the neck and right above, like right at my sacral chakra or above the pubis bone. And it was just so powerful and tangible, you mm-hmm. know. So it is interesting where I think trauma or narratives, the words we say, coming back to your abracadabra, has a direct effect on our body, on our composition.
Exactly.
On our nervous system.
Absolutely. Yeah, the speaking, it starts with our thought, our intention, saying it. I say that it's very important when we ask for something, when we want, when we are ready for something. Like we said, we do attract where we are, and we attract that which we are ready for, and we want to be there. And I can my experience is just a living example. It's saying it, and I had to hear it. I had to practice saying it out loud, so I can hear it back into my head, back through my voice, back. And that is creating, really slowly creating what we want, but it creates the space. It's like asking, what is more perfect, God's creation or man's creation?
So it's the same.
not really.
We're
actually
a manifestation.
Well, so. God's creation is creation, but we are getting everything in potential. It's like barley. We cannot make beer. We cannot just drink. We have to make something. So we got everything here in potential. Mm-hmm. And through our work, through our persistence, through our commitment, and commitment is not only to a relationship, commitment to what we choose to do, if we're choosing to do any kind of work, any kind of, so to be committed.
And to our word,
consistent.
Where integrity comes from. If you think about it, I had this thought that a lot of us relate to integrity as, oh, I'm going to do what I said, right? So if I say I'm going to go to someone's birthday party, it's like no matter rain or shine, or if I get sick, if I'm a woman or man of my integrity and word, I go to the birthday party. But there's another layer of commitment into integrity, and it's the things we don't speak, right? And it's our deeper truth, and it's our highest purpose. And, you know, we can allow ourselves to be guided. I think so many people don't know how to listen to their gut, or they have a feeling or a resistance to something.
That's right.
And when the integrity is just about, like, literally do the masculine, do what I said I was going to do, there's so much fear around. But if I have a thought like, oh, I dream of learning Spanish, and I never speak it, you know, I never say to anybody, oh, I want to learn Spanish. And I just think it, aren't we still out of integrity?
Well, that's the question is for people that are listening. What does the integrity mean? The integrity is following through and being and taking our. Explain to me, what do you mean by the integrity?
I think many people define it in their own way, but I essentially think it is being of your word. And again, there is a follow through component to it.
It's integration, yeah.
Right. And part of integrity has to do with what are we committed to? And if we're not fully aware of what we're committed to, then our then you're stuck in a world of just saying you're going to do something and then doing it, even if it doesn't resonate with you, right?
Absolutely. And this is part of where in the Torah, you know, and what is attributed to the to people of Israel is Na'aseh Nishma. Is let's do, we'll do, and we'll listen. You know, so people will say, "Oh, you're just doing it, and you're listening without asking questions." No, we want to ask questions first. Why the Torah was given to Jews according to Judaism is we say we'll do it and then we'll listen. Meaning, we'll do it and then we'll understand. Take for example a child that wants to walk straight through that door, but the father knows that behind that door there is nothing. There is just didn't finish construction, so there is just a hole into the ground. The child doesn't know that. The child, let's say, even there is not a door. The child doesn't see. I say sometimes the kids sometimes don't see further than their nose size because mm-hmm. they're here and so sometimes we do things and we do not understand the ramifications and the outcome of what that may be, of what our action will be, of how this will be. How it will come back, right? When we say it'll come back, whatever you do will come back, right? Mm-hmm. How will that come back? So we don't have sometimes an understanding or full view or full gamut of what will happen, you know? Take me, for example, you mentioned that when you were 10, you learned that's where really things started, right? Mm-hmm. And you start working with, you start really experiencing as you wrote it, you start learning about calories, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's like the simple way of describing it.
I know. We'll put it as simple. We don't need to make things complicated. You know, truth is very simple.
Yeah.
It's so you've been in this place and as a child, as a 10-year-old child, you mm-hmm. were very influenced by our parents, environment, mm-hmm. and then you struggle for many years with weight, believing that you're not enough. And this is some form of self-abuse that is coming from the outside, because as a child, we don't, you know, we expect or we hope that our parents guide us.
Yes.
You know? So how did that, tell me about that period of time. How did it go through? You went through the depression, you went through food issues and overweight, if I could say that, or as
yeah, I mean, I think maybe
you did self mutilation.
Yeah,
that's what
so
you
I was.
Tell me.
I mean, it started at 10, but I became anorexic, then bulimic. I was a cutter, which is self mutilation.
Meaning
I'd cut my wrists or my arms or my, you know, parts of my body.
Mm.
And I was suicidal. And it's interesting because all of these things were taught to me. Mm-hmm. There's a fascinating and terrifying statistic that if you know somebody who committed suicide,
mm-hmm.
you are 50% more likely to do it yourself.
Really?
And I watched, unfortunately, somebody commit suicide when I was 13 years old.
You actually, you witnessed
it. Not in purpose. Yeah, I witnessed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So this imprinted an idea that would have probably, you know, like if you are unhappy in life, I think we all have gone through that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are moments where so many of us contemplate the like, oh God, it would just be easier if I didn't have to deal with all of this, if I wasn't here, right? Mm. But then to like, see the act execute, you know, taking place, it makes it very real and very possible. You know, like you don't know what you don't know. And so if mm-hmm. you know it, now you know.
Now you know. Now it's in your, now it's in your space.
Yes.
Now it's in your space.
So I had to heal because I truly believe I would not be here otherwise. You know.
So what was your anchor?
Well,
did you have an anchor to get out of it, or
first,
were you just like...
So I have a very... I mean, both my parents are amazing, but my dad, I think, had a better... especially as things progress, he had a better understanding of, like, this is really bad and she needs help. You know, I think with my mom, there's a little bit more of like tough love, like you're fine, you're strong, be beautiful, be bold, and like get out there and do your thing. Like you're fine.
That was your mom would keep telling you that.
Yeah, like the tough love kind of thing. And whereas my dad was like, oh, I don't think she's so fine anymore.
So your mom had more of an issue of being intimate?
Yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And so I went off to college. Mm-hmm. And I think while I was at home, all of those behaviors and patterns were there, anorexia, bulimia, self-mutilation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're so busy as a young adult, whether it be like friends over all the time or in school with like all these children, right? That, sorry, I realized my computer is about to die, so I just have to plug it in.
Sure.
But what I was going to say is like there was just massive amounts of distraction. Whereas when I went off to college, it was just me, myself, and a huge amount of loneliness and having to take care of myself. That's when things really fell apart.
When things start getting darker, really.
Yes. And I mean, sometimes it was hard for me to leave the house to take classes with the stress of having to perform at school and be held accountable for my structure, my day. You know, no one's feeding me, no one's saying class is over, go home, do homework, or be on swim team for 2 hours and then do homework. It's just all up to you. It just got very bad. And you're under peer pressure to drink and to party, and you feel left out, and you've got to make all new friends.
Your mic.
So there was, thank you. So it was a series of incidences that got where I, at one point, I ended up in a hospital. I was in two car crashes in like one month. I began seeing a therapist, and it was really lucky because I also started dating somebody who had his own very rough journey in life, and he was very empathetic and understanding of my struggle. And I think he had a hunch that, like, from what I would probably tell him about my therapist, and he was like, she's not a very good therapist.
So you didn't see that. You just needed somebody to hang on to. And you
I mean, how would you know? You know, you're seeing somebody, like, that's life, right, is already so bad, you know? So I don't know what feeling better is. If you don't know how to feel good, it's not like you have a concept. So yeah. I really didn't know what it meant. I had no idea what feeling good would feel like. Mm. That was not a familiar feeling. So long story short, he went with me to meet my therapist. He's like, can I come with you? And afterwards, I'm not sure how long he waited, but he basically said, you're not going to get any better seeing that woman. And he said, I have somebody that I'd like you to meet. And so he introduced me to his therapist, who was also a shaman.
There you go.
And a bodhisattva. She took the bodhisattva vow, which is to reincarnate onto earth and continue to heal, to support people in healing and growing. Mm-hmm. And when you reach in Buddhism, if you reach enlightenment, you do not return to earth. But with the bodhisattva vow, you continue to reincarnate to heal the world. So, incredible woman. And that's when my life truly began to change.
Took a turn, yeah.
And she had...
And when was that?
I was, I think, 19 or 20.
2 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
I just healed so quickly.
Which means you're 22.
My birthday is coming up. I'm going to be 23. That's awesome. I love this. I'm Benjamin Button. I age backwards.
Oh, that was a great movie.
That was a great movie. No, it's okay. So I worked with her. I even stayed in Santa Barbara. I was at UC Santa Barbara. And I stayed an extra year to continue my healing journey. It was very conflicting moving back to Los Angeles and being away from her. I was in such a better place that it felt like it'd be good. And I was committed to finding a therapist here. And I did a few trips back to meet with her. But it was in Los Angeles that I found yoga.
In 2009, you were in Power Yoga, right? Yoga West.
Yeah. And that was incredible. I, having been an athlete my whole life, a gymnast, a figure skater, and I was on swim team, I swam butterfly, and I'd always competed against myself. I mean, yes, there was scores, but I wasn't a team sports person. It was me and the clock, or me.
Was that because part of the old story of you're not good enough, you have to prove it even to yourself, that you don't even know that you are trying to prove it to yourself, that you think that you're...
There's part of that. There was a huge fear of being responsible in team. Partnership. I mean, I didn't view partnership as a safe place. That wasn't modeled for me. And also, that's a victim mentality. I didn't see it, so I can't do it. It is possible for me to be in partnership, but it just, to that point, I didn't feel safe. And making a bad shot, right? If you're on a team and you take a shot and you miss, right? I was petrified of the scrutiny that I would fall under. You know, if I miss or if I failed, I wasn't letting myself down or a number on a scoreboard down.
Yeah.
I was letting all of these people down. I couldn't stand it. And I didn't know how to connect. So yoga was so cool because it's a room full of people, right? Like all of these people. Mm-hmm. And we're moving in harmony. And we're sinking our breath, right? And like it's encouraged to stay in line. It's encouraged to be like the others, right? You're not like the lead ballerina and then your backup dancer.
Yeah, you're together.
Everybody is together.
So, Rachel, believe it or not, we're like maybe 5 minutes or less.
Oh, we're just getting to the good stuff.
I know. So we can do this again. But from that, you are now a yoga instructor.
Yeah.
And I really encourage you, especially sometimes it's good if, you know, sometimes we tell ourselves, oh, when I feel this way, then I will do this.
Right.
When I feel, and I want to encourage you that many times it is the exact opposite.
Oh, sure.
You do. So, and yoga will move you towards action, move you to any kind of movement. But because we have Rachel here, I've seen Rachel, before the coronic time, she was doing yoga on the beach and she does, you do private yoga.
Yeah, so I teach a lot of,
Talk about this, and I want to give people the tools and the information, and so go ahead.
Sure. Well, I teach privately. I've studied so many different types of yoga. I've been studying yoga since literally 2009 and teaching. I teach for Yoga Works. Now Yoga Works is obviously not open, but when it opens up again, I'll be back there. I've worked with companies on meditation, and I basically now do consulting for companies where I develop their wellness program.
Wonderful.
And sometimes that means I'm the one also executing that program by bringing in the yoga classes and the meditation, but I also do spatial design so that their work environment is truly a more inviting space for them to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
And that means lighting and plants and the arrangement of the desks and, you know, being a huge believer in stand-up desks and having ergonomic chairs like the one that you're sitting in that looks so comfortable.
That's a chair.
It looks like a very good chair. So anyway, and just creating a nutrition program for companies. A lot of times you go into the office and you sit down for your morning meeting and you're getting fed like donuts and things.
And then by 10:30, 11,
your mind. Yeah. And it's like, I get that that's a little cheaper, but you know, there are still affordable ways to create a very healthy, supportive environment for your employees to thrive so they don't have to take sick days and complain about backaches and sciatica.
It's maintenance. Yeah. It's maintenance. So, yeah.
And then I do this on a private level,
okay.
Of course. And I work with a lot of executives, so a lot of men. And then I am a certified life coach and ontological coach, which is
Mazel tov.
The study of guiding people through to essentially live their best life, to find more harmony. And I do see myself as a guide. I'm not here to give you answers. The truth is there's only two outcomes if you give someone answers. Either they like them, they use them, and then they credit you and you're the expert, which is disempowering. Or they use it and then it doesn't work, and then you're the asshole. or they throw it away. I'm going to do my own thing. So I really believe that the people I work with have the answers. They just have to be guided.
They do have the tools.
They have the opportunity to be.
We all have the tools. We all do have the tools. You know what the problem is? We never had the access. And this is, for example, you doing yoga. I'm working with sound, coaching, the words, music, herbal, plant medicine. These are all giving us access to what we already have.
Yeah.
And so, Rachel Davidson, I'm going to put a link. I tagged her so you can follow her. You can click on her and click on her link.
Yeah. Instagram is the best place to find me. One of my dear friends is building out my new website.
Wonderful.
So delighted to share when it's complete.
I will put your Instagram link on the post.
Thank you.
And then people can reach you.
Yeah. And for those of you who are tuning in, my name is Rachel Bess. That's B-E-S-S Davidson.
So it's not only Rachel. I know you're not only Rachel Davidson, but it's Rachel Bess Davidson, B-E-S-S.
Believe Rachel it or not, there's a lot of Rachel Davidsons in the world, but there's only one Rachel Bess Davidson.
there's only one Rachel Davidson, this one here. Thank you so much for coming up and sharing your gifts. 2 years, and I'm looking forward to meeting other times and again and see how things are progressing and everything.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for you. Thank you for being here. Abracadabra, create what you speak. Make magic. Thank you. Have a wonderful week. See you.
You're listening to Abracadabra, create what you speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.